Well, I'm Daryl, compulsive operator, and thank you so much for asking me. It's an honor to always address the steps, especially according to the Big Book. I remember when I first came into program, my sponsor told me that there are many different ways to work the steps, but we only have one way that we know for certain is going to work, and that's the one that's brought to us through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's what we decided to use. And of course, we didn't have as many choices as we do nowadays because there were no OA books. There was no OA 12 and 12. We had just for today, and I think we had the Brown Book of Overeaters Anonymous, and that was it. But anyway, so I came into the program in 1987. So that's 37 years ago. And but my eating history started a long time before that, when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I was overweight by the time I was 7, so I know that I started overeating probably when I was 4, maybe 5, but way back there. And my mom was starting to take some flack from her sisters over the fact that I was overweight, and they were giving her a bad time. Why do you let him get so fat? Why do you let him eat so much? And all of that stuff. And so she was taking that flack, and she started really trying to regulate my food and my weight, and she became very proactive with it, so much so that I was inclined to become a secret eater. That was the what happened. As a result of that, I would sneak things out of the kitchen when nobody was looking, and I'd put them under the covers of my bed, and then I would eat them later on that night when I went to bed, have a little binge under the covers. A lot of times it was bread because it was easy for me to get. We had a bread box on the counter instead, so I didn't have to open any cabinets or the refrigerator or anything like that where I would get caught. But I could sneak that bread box open and get a couple of pieces of bread and crunch them up into little balls and throw them under the covers of my bed and eat them later on that night. And so that was the beginning of my secret binge behavior. And it grew. And when I got to the time when I was able to wander around a bit, going off to school. We walked to school in those days, and I would have the opportunity once in a while to stop and get some extra candy or whatever, and I did, and continued to gain weight. And then on, I guess it was probably after I graduated from college and got married. And so now I was and had a job, so I had income and in that. So I was at that point in time probably about 225 pounds, something like that. Not too bad. And I started eating more, gaining a little bit more weight, and I became concerned and decided that I wanted to do something about it. So I started going to Weight Watchers. That was my first experience in really trying some organized way to deal with my weight and my food. And I had some success at first. I lost about 30 or 40 pounds, and then it says in the reading tonight about that some trivial excuse would come up and get us to go back out. and to eat again. And the trivial excuse, and maybe not so trivial, but was in those days Weight Watchers insisted that you ate a certain amount of liver every week. And I hated liver, and I can tell you that. And so that was my and not so trivial excuse, but it was an excuse. And so I stopped out. I dropped out of the Weight Watchers, and I started gaining that weight back almost immediately. And that continued every time I would try something, whatever it was. I would usually have a little bit of success, but I would always come back and gain even more. And of course, just like our chapter told us tonight, that that there would be success, but always followed by even worse relapse. That was, I think, pretty much what it said. And that was true. That was true for me, time after time after time. And so back when I I guess it was probably in the 1970s, 1979, that I had the opportunity to join a or be part of a research project for middle-aged men. And they were going to put half of the group on a diet that had been formulated by the government, and it was going to be an exercise program. And I was hoping to be part of that group as opposed to the group that was not going to have any regulation. And they were going to see which groups had the better success with health and longevity. And so as I went through the screening for that research project, the doctor who was in charge of the project called me into his office. Now this, so he wasn't a doctor like with like your normal doctor. This was a research doctor, and he was just interested in data. He wasn't interested in people. And he told me that I was not a candidate for that program. And I said, why not? And he said, because you're going to be dead by the time you're 50. And that it really kind of was a cold shot of water right in the kisser, because that was I was at the time 39 years old, so that's 11 years. And this guy's telling me I'm going to be dead. And so anyway, I took it to heart and decided I have to do something about it, do something about my weight, and I couldn't afford to wait any longer. And so immediately thereafter, I ran across a guy in business that I knew that had lost a lot of weight, and I asked him how he had done it. And he told me that he had done it through the OptiFast program at UCLA. I said, wow. So I live in Southern California, so I went over to UCLA and I enrolled in that program. I started out, I was 300 and some odd pounds, 312 pounds. And I started, it was a fast where you had some protein drink that you had to drink. So I did that, and I stuck with that all the way through. And I lost 156 pounds in 9 months. I was never felt more powerful over this disease as I did then. I didn't know it was a disease, by the way. I thought I was the victim of weak willpower, and nobody ever told me different. And even at some of the other things that I had tried, some of the pills and shots and diets that I had tried in the past. And so I came to the place of where it was time for us to stop the fast and to start incorporating regular food into our program. And so and of course, it was they had a diet that they wanted us to follow it as we got back into the food. But I have to tell you that I didn't last long on the food, that once the food was introduced, back into the diet that I would start. I started gaining weight at first kind of sporadically because I was fighting it so hard. But then more and more I was unable to do so. And you know, I remember the part of the reading tonight talked about that sometimes when somebody had a long history of freedom from alcohol, that once they started drinking again, they would be as helpless as they had been before, powerless as they had been before. That is a progressive disease. We got worse, never better, and that was true of me. And so anyway, and I gained that weight back. I lost 156 pounds, and I gained back 140 of those pounds. I binged my way back to that, and so that was my there I was, and I was you know, I had put all of those clothes that I had worn before aside, that I wouldn't have to wear those again. And here I was having to wear those again, and I had people who had been patting me on the back and telling me what a good job I had done, and now they were looking at me and wondering what was wrong with me. And of course, I was kind of wondering the same thing. And so that was there I was. I was back at the situation where I was before. I was morbidly obese, and I needed to lose weight, or the doctor could be right. I might be dead by the time I'm 50, and I'm getting older all the time. And so then I decided I was going to restart at UCLA, and I did. So I lost the weight a second time. This was about 5 or 6 years period. And I lost a second time, gained it back a second time, and then lost it or started a third time. But on my way on the third time, well, I get to the place of where I decided that, you know, I'll bet you that if I had one meal a week, because you weren't supposed to have any meals, just take that protein drink. And so if I had one meal a week, they wouldn't even know that I had. And even though they checked me every week, and I said, well, I'm going to do it. And so I went in for my regular Saturday checkup. And afterwards, I went to one of those little restaurants in Westwood, which is adjacent to UCLA. And I would have a meal. And I did that for several weeks, and they didn't know, they couldn't tell. And so I felt so good about that. And I was going to beat that system. And then I got this even better idea. Yeah, why not do a Sunday brunch? And now, as you guys know, a Sunday brunch is all you can eat. For people like us, it's all you can possibly eat. And there was no hiding it. And they knew almost immediately that I had breached the regimen and food regimen that they had laid out. And so, after warning me, I found myself not being able to stop and not being able to control the weight, and they kicked me out. And so that was where I found myself. And for a period of about 5 or 6 months, I was trying to get back to some sort of a losing program somewhere. Everything I had tried before didn't work anymore. And I tried the doctors, the diets, the Weight Watchers, and all that stuff, and nothing was working. And then I think the thing that really put the last nail in the coffin for me was that I had been a secret eater, as I told you. And so I had a binge behavior that was almost like a ritual. And it was on Saturdays. I would go down to my office, and we had a manufacturing facility that did not work on the weekend. So there would be nobody down there on Saturdays. And I would go down, I'd open my office, there'd be nobody there. And I would clear off my desk, and then I would go to this little food stand that was on the corner. And I would drive there, and I would tell them that I was ordering for the crew, and I would order a bunch of different stuff, but it was all stuff I like to eat, and a lot of it was greasy stuff. And so they would load this box with all this stuff, and I would get several different kinds of drinks, so they would think that I was ordering for a bunch of people. But they see a 300-pound guy coming in and ordering all that food. I'm sure that they didn't think I was ordering for a bunch of people. But anyway, I didn't figure that out till later. But anyway, I this time, as the guy put it on the counter, and he started putting the food in there, I couldn't wait to get behind closed doors. Couldn't even wait to get in my car. I started eating it, and I mean, really started eating it in the same way that I ate behind closed doors. And people were looking at me, and for a secret eater, and who really valued looking good to other people, and that was me. I wanted to stop, and I couldn't stop, so I really see. I really identify with some of those parts of the chapter that talked about that they wanted to stop, but they never crossed their mind that maybe they couldn't. And I had come to a place of where. And so then that was actually me taking my first step, is when I realized that I couldn't stop. So I realized I was powerless over food. I hadn't heard the steps yet, and I hadn't been to a meeting or anything. And but I knew that I was powerless over food. So when I guess it was just shortly thereafter that my ex-wife was alcoholic, and she was in recovery, in a recovery home. And as I went to visit her, they saw that was the way I ate when I was there at their place, at dinner time, that I was a compulsive eater. And they told her to tell me that there was a place for me like there was for her. So she was getting sober through AA. And so they told me about OA, and I went to my first meeting. It was a Tuesday night meeting, and I went, and I really felt I really felt the camaraderie of the group, and I really knew that they understood the food thing without a doubt. And so that was really a good experience. And then they started talking about God, and all of a sudden I started fading real fast, because I wasn't ready to deal with this. And it says in the book, in the chapter tonight, about whether you're being able to find recovery on a non-spiritual basis. Well, I certainly wasn't able to even try. And so I didn't say anything, but I got me to my second meeting. I went to a Thursday night meeting. And so it got even worse. At the Thursday night meeting, they decided that they would have a topic of miracles, and they wanted to have everybody tell a miracle story. And I was listening to these stories, and I want to tell you that I was none too happy. And they came to me, I told them so, and I told them, that they didn't sound like miracles. They sounded like coincidences to me. And they told me to keep coming back, and I'd see my own miracle. Is that 3 minutes, or is that time?
Now you got 3 minutes.
Okay, good. Okay. And so anyway, I that was where I found myself. With just this recommendation that I keep coming back, and almost kind of a veiled promise that I would find what I was looking for, and a way of food recovery if I did that. But anyway, I came back to or I intended to come back on Monday. This was Thursday night meeting, and the next meeting was a newcomer meeting. It was Monday, so I'm gonna go to that one. Maybe I'll find something there that'll help. And but anyway, on Saturday, that before that Monday night meeting, my ex-wife was really had been released from the she had finished the AA program, and so they told her that if she had cravings, that chocolate would help stem the cravings. And so she had made this batch of chocolate chip cookies, and she had baked them that morning, Saturday morning. And so she came out, and that's when my recovery began in OA. And this is about step one, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that part of it. That'll come at a different time. But this is step one, and so this is about the disease. And so as I reflect back at that point in time, there had been what 47 years of me binging and behind closed doors and that and all of the things that that they talked about in the chapter, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Boy, I had that. I had that in spades. And all of the things that I had tried, I talked about the methods that they had tried, drinking beer only, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, for me, it was diets and diet doctors, and it was shots, and it was just anything that that I thought might help. And once I got into recovery, and this is this was something that somebody shared at a meeting. Once we had internet and stuff, that that there is was a site where it would if you put in your vital information, that it would tell you how long you would live. And so I remember that guy, that doctor, telling me I'd be dead by the time I was 50. So I said, I'm going to go to that site, and I'm going to plug in my information from that time when I went through that screening. And that's what I did. I plugged that in from that physical information in. And what it came back? It came back, and it says that your personal day of death was, and it was in November of, I would have been 51 years old at the and it had a little tombstone that popped up, and it said, have a nice day. And I took a screenshot of that, and I have it in my scrapbook, and that I this little tombstone telling me to have a nice day. And but the doctor apparently was pretty right on. So all I know is that I found something that that worked, that as powerless as I was, and I guarantee you I was as powerless as you can get when it came to food, that I found that I had the opportunity to have a much longer life than I would have had otherwise. So it wasn't too long ago I turned 85, and those extra I look at it as extra 35 years from 50 to 85. Yeah, have been great years, and I just thank God for that. And we'll talk more about recovery as we go through the steps, but tonight we're talking about the powerlessness and the power of the disease, and it's powerful. I've seen a lot of guys that didn't make it, and I personally sponsored two guys that that both died of this disease, and they were both 32 years old. That's the kind of disease it is, and I've had a number of other guys that have not made it as well over the years, and but there's a lot of guys that have made it, and that they're still doing well in recovery and that. So there's hope here. And so that's as you get ready to do the steps, go through this big book and learn how to do the steps according to the big book. That's what we'll be reviewing, that you'll have the opportunity to see that that there's a recovery that is given us item by item on how to do it, exactly how to do it. And it says that that's the purpose of the book. It's our basic textbook, and it tells us how to work the steps. It gives us very detailed instructions. And if you haven't worked the steps according to the big book yet, it wouldn't hurt to review it and give it a shot, because it really is an eye opener. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Gerald, for sharing your living example of that first part of step one. We admitted we were powerless over food. Thank you so, so much. Let's put our hands together for Daryl. I know a lot of us are all. Yes. Thank you so much. You know, now is the time we're going to go to our breakout rooms, and I'm going to populate. Daryl had suggested this question for us to get started with when we go to our breakout rooms. And I'll read the question. It's in the chat, and it comes from page 30 of our reading. Have you fully conceded to your innermost self that you are a compulsive overeater?